Barbara Marlowe, Reel 5.
Nevertheless, when the Russians came to the village, all the young women went into hiding or dressed up with scarves over their heads and blackened faces and God knows what, including myself, because there were such tales of rapes, but I don't think it happened in the village. And we stayed there till I think March, when my mother decided that we should go back to Warsaw. When we arrived in Warsaw, again, I think we hitchhiked to Warsaw. And on one occasion, we were on a lorry with liberated French prisoners. So my mother started talking to them, and they said they were going back to France. And she asked them to take a message to her sister in France, saying that they had seen her and myself. Why I'm saying especially her and myself is that we'll come here later on. We got to Warsaw, which was completely in ruins.
Was it?
There were hardly any houses standing at that time. Because after the Warsaw Rising, what was left standing, the Germans systematically dynamited. It was dreadful. And we went to some Jewish organization. There was a kitchen, a place where Jewish people could give their names, the survivors, and apparently they were transmitting those names on the radio to tell people in Israel and in the West who had survived. So my mother gave her name. And there I think we met our friend, Mr. Novogrodsky, who was in the Jewish police. He and his wife survived the uprising and hid in the sewers till the liberation. They had a flat, and they took us in and let us, we could sleep on the floor. And then we went to the Praga district, where my grandparents' old cook lived. And again, we were welcomed with open arms. And I remember her saying, everything I've got comes from my service with Dr. and Mrs. Beckman. It's all yours. And that's how I came to have a few pieces of couple of pieces of china and two or three items which came from my grandparents, including the frame of a photograph frame, which my grandfather used to keep on his desk with their wedding photographs. I haven't got their wedding photograph, but I've got the frame, which my father specially asked me to look after. It's a piece of family history. Now, we were virtually penniless by then, to that extent that when we went out, my mother would go to a cafe, ask for a plate of soup and two spoons, because it was all we could afford was one plate of soup between us. Our cook then made a suggestion that she had a friend who was making soap. Normally, she would ask for a deposit for the soap for sale, but she would guarantee that we were honest. And we got a little suitcase full of this wretched soap to sell. Well, the soap was not of the highest quality, it was wet as anything. And my mother, who was a very honest lady, when she went into a shop and tried to sell it, and the shopkeeper would say, but this is all wet, she would say, well, yes, I'm sorry. So I took over. And I did quite well, up to the time when I put the suitcase on the windowsill when I came back. And it was a sunny day, and the soap shrunk, so it was unsellable. So that was my sales career. Well, we really didn't know what we were going to do at that point in time. Till luck changed. And one day, walking in the street, suddenly a car stopped. And a man jumped out. Hugged my mother. I said, what are you doing? It was a pre-war friend of my parents who had been in Russia and had come back to Poland and was a director of the Repatriation Institute in Łódź. When he saw our circumstances, he said, right, come to Łódź. Said my mother, I'll give you a job. So my mother had never worked in all her life. I said, well, you work in the accounts department. So she was put in the accounts department. We started off again, sleeping on various people's floors. And as far as I was concerned, the first priority was I wanted to go to school. I had missed school. I was always a very avid reader, and I read masses. And of course, I hadn't been to school apart from the very brief period in the convent. I hadn't been to school since 1939. Various of my brother's friends and Jola Wedecka and her friends were giving me little lessons. So I did a little bit of Latin, I did some maths, but nothing structured, you know, everybody was teaching me what they felt like teaching me. But I was reading a lot of Polish literature and poetry and learning it by heart because I loved it. But the moment the war ended and I was in a place where we were going to be, I went and registered for school. That was May 1945, and the school ended in June. But I decided that regardless of my educational standards, I would go into the right class for my age. So I did. In the summer holidays came, by which time we had rented a room. But we're still in bad financial straits. My mother had a coat made out of a blanket. And that was the sort of conditions we were in. I think we were given those blankets at the Jewish Center, but I can't remember. So she had a coat made out of it. And I said, right, well, I'm going to get a job for the summer holidays. And I went to my mother's office, because already before, she used to bring the books home, and I used to help her, because I was quite good at maths, better than she was, in fact. And when I went to see the doctor for the medical, because he took me over for the summer, he said, you know, I would much rather you had a holiday than a job. To which I remember my mother saying, well, if she doesn't get a job, she can't eat. So I worked for 2 months. So the school year started again. I went to school. My mother was working. We still had no news of my father, although we were sending out letters, whatever we could. We had a contact in Switzerland. You know, just sending messages right, left, and center. And then, I rejoined the Girl Guides. And on the 1st of November, went to Warsaw with a Girl Guide, because that's, in Poland, it's a day when you remember the dead, the 1st of November. So I took part in that. We came back to Łódź, and one evening, there was with a little boy, men came with a little slip of paper, trust them, and waiting for them. My father's handwriting. It was a couple who had come from Austria and were supposed to escort a group through the Green Frontier to the West. It was a strange group. There was my mother and myself. There was a 14-year-old boy, the son of my father's commanding officer, whose mother had died during the war. There was another officer's wife with a little girl of six. And there was another lady, also wife of one of my father's officer friends. So none of them were Jewish. Who came from a very well-known family, Milford family, and who played at Wimbledon before the war. The strange group and the two guys, a man and a woman, Jewish, were supposed to get us to Linz in Austria, where my father and Mr. Modasevich were waiting for us. What my father did not know was that they had no contact whatsoever, nor any route for getting us across. They first took us to Katowice, to a Jewish center, again, because at that point the surviving Jews were trying to get out of Berlin, but I don't think they had any luck. I mean, there was nobody Jewish in the group. So then they took us to a village, or a small town, near the Polish Czech frontier. And literally started hitchhiking on Russian lorries, and we were petrified. But in the end, they were successful. They got the Russian lorry to agree to get us to the Austrian Czech frontier. So we loaded on the lorry, they covered up with tarpaulins. We went through the Czech frontier and into Czechoslovakia, and everything looked fine. So that night, the lorry stopped, and the Russians said, out! No going any further. So there we were at night, on the road in Czechoslovakia, with no papers, nothing. Not difficult to believe, we got arrested by the Czech police, who decided that we were German spies. So they put us into the local police station with some drunk young policemen who were abusing us for being Germans, and so set us on benches and kept us sitting up, wouldn't let us lie down till I got fed up. And I said, the Germans haven't killed me, I'm going to sleep. And my mother nearly went berserk when she came up with a gun to me, and I said, good night. But we were very, very lucky, because the next day they were still insisting we were spies, and they said they would send us to the military police, who would deal with us. Which they did. They transferred us to the military police, and we were in luck, because it was a unit of the Free Czechs who had come from England, back home. And when we sort of found them sympathetic, and I don't know who, but somebody told them that the truth. And they were wondering. They gave up their beds in the barracks, and they said, okay, we'll help you, but you can't go to Linz, because we can't get you there. But you can go to Pilsen, provided you get there quickly, because the Americans are pulling out. At that time, the Americans were still in Linz. In Pilsen, but they were moving out and the Russians were taking over. So they said they would give us travel warrants and a pass to get to Pilsen. But this involved changing trains and stations in Prague. And they said, this we'll see you on the train, but not in Prague. So be very careful that nobody gets suspicious. Well, I can't remember how we got to Prague and how we transferred, but 6 o'clock in the morning, on some date or other, we arrived in Pilsen. We got on the train. I said, right now, where? Where are the Americans? Where are the Russians? Where do we go? Well, this sort of strange looking group started walking the streets of Pilsen at 6 o'clock in the morning, till we arrived in front of the big hotel with two MPs outside. So we said, hallelujah, we've arrived. We went in and just sat down, and this luck will have it, about 8 in the morning, a Polish officer walked down the staircase, took one look at me and said, Barbara, what are you doing here? It was somebody whom I knew in the rising. So they said, well, we've got 2 days, and our job is to see that all the escapees from Poland get out. So they sent our 2 guys on their way to Linz to contact my father. And 2 days later, early in the morning, looked out of the window, and there was my father, whom I hadn't seen for 5.5 years. And, well, that was, we got, he came with his friend, and they had a military, what was called the 15-tonner, and loaded us all on it. He had military papers for us, and I think we had uniforms, yes, he had uniforms to dress us in. And the first night we spent in Munich, in the American Officers Club, which was a kind of luxury, I'll never forget, unlimited donuts and coffee. It was absolute luxury. And then we traveled through the Brenner Pass and went to Milan, where I think the others went on, but my father, my mother and I stayed in Milan because father wanted to buy some clothes for us. We had nothing. And we stayed there for a few days. And of course, the main question was, when are we going to see George, my brother? And my father said, oh, we knew that he was in the airport. He said, oh, he's in Africa. We'll see when he gets leaving. And then after a few gorgeous days in Milan, absolute heaven, you know. New clothes, new underwear, unlimited food, the luxury of the officers' club where you pressed a button on the wall and the room service came. And it was unbelievable. We arrived in Italy, we arrived in a place where my father was stationed, it was called Porto dei Canati. And while my mother was being greeted by the other officers and the body, I rushed upstairs to my father's room, where there was a big pile of letters, and started looking for letters from my brother. And I remember running down, it was a little palazzo, which Italians call it, belonging to Beniamino Gigli, the singer. And I was running down this beautiful staircase. See, there's nothing for George. And my father just stopped me. He said, don't say anything. And that's when I found out that my brother had been killed. In July 1944, he did not he was a navigator in the Polish Air Force at that time. And his Lancaster was returning from a raid over the Ruhr and never made it. And that was George's penultimate flight because he had done two rounds, and he was supposed to, they were supposed to be grounded after two rounds, but he had already applied to be a pathfinder, and he was 4 months short of his 22nd birthday. So that really ruined it for my mother and myself. It was something which we, strangely, we never considered the possibility. George was in the West, he was safe. I remember his friend's mother saying to my mother, "Aren't you lucky?" Because so many of them died. They didn't know. And that was November, end of November, 45. So the question arose again, what to do with me? I needed to go to school. The only school I could go to was a Polish military school, which was very close by, in a place called Port of St. George. But I was 15 years old. And although my father had explained the situation to the powers that be in the Polish army, and it was all approved and arranged, somebody forgot to tell the medical officer that he was dealing with a 15-year-old, if not an 18-year-old. So I failed my medical, which put a kibosh on the whole thing. Where was I going to go to school? Well, fortunately, the case was taken up with General Anders, who gave permission for the underdeveloped 18-year-old to join the army. So I went into uniform and went to the school for the Polish ATS, because so many of them had been in prisoner of war camps after the Warsaw Rising, and which had interrupted their education. So they set up a proper secondary school. And that's where I went, and where I met several of my old friends from the Warsaw Rising and the Girl Guides. And apart from, I was sent for 1 month to Lake Como at Easter 46, because I was still not very good physical condition. I had tired trouble with generally all the sort of consequences of the conditions during the war. I spent a month in an office, in a military rest home or something, by Lake Como. And got what was called our little matura, matriculation, which is roughly equivalent to O-levels, or so it's supposed to be. And in August 1944, with the 8th Army, came to England.
August
1946. 1946, came to England, on board the Empress of Australia, and found myself in a military camp near Hereford at Foxley, where the school was set up. Now, my father's brother, Alexander, the journalist, was in England, was in London, he was editor of the Polish Daily. So I went to visit him, and although my parents were still in Italy at that time, I decided that as soon as possible I wanted to go to a proper English school. So when my parents arrived in November, in October 46, I put it to them that I said I should really go to a proper school. And my father started making inquiries, and my mother's father, who had escaped from Belgium with his wife and son, was a few months younger than myself, were also in London. And their son was at Latimer Upper School in London. He suggested that I should try for Godolphin and Latimer School for Girls, and my father went to see the headmistress, Miss Joyce Bishop, who later became Dame Joyce Bishop. Well, she was a very special lady, and she told my father that she had one Polish girl who came to her a year before, having been to Auschwitz concentration camp, called Anna Abramska, and this girl had done so well that she felt that if Polish children are as hardworking as this child, she would like to help. So in December 1946, I exchanged my Polish army uniform for a tunic and started at Godolphin. And this was quite difficult because I had never done physics or chemistry. My English was shaky, to say the least. Sitting through double periods of sciences was a nightmare. Suddenly having to think in inches and ounces and fractions was a new experience. English literature was doing my best. Trying to understand what was happening was another problem, to say the least. One thing was I was good at French because from the age of 5 I had a French governess, so I was virtually bilingual in French. So the biology teacher used to give me lectures in French. The French teacher was not quite so happy with me. And the classic was when she said to me, Barbara, couldn't you speak French with a more English accent? By Easter, I had done my book, school certificate, and I did very badly. And Miss Bishop called my father in and said that the school had a very good record and does not like their children to fail school certificate. And she would suggest that I take an extra year. Before doing my exams. When father came back, I would not accept this and said, unless I'm allowed to sit the exams in the summer, I'm leaving school and that's it. So father went back, told Miss Bishop's position and said that after what I had been through and been virtually independent, he has to take account of my views. And she was quite wonderful. She accepted it and said, all right, if I want to work, she will give me all the help. She arranged with a retired headmistress friend of hers to give me lessons during the holidays in English and English Lit. My cousin was helping me with math. I was working with my father translating Shakespeare into modern English and into French. And we got to June when I took school certificate, and to everybody's surprise, I got school certificate with exemption from matriculation. I failed physics and chemistry and biology, but really there was too much to catch up on. But I passed French, Polish, geography, English, English Lit, and math.
So what year would that have been?
That was in June 1947. Well, at the same time, the question arose what I wanted to do after that. And I didn't want to read languages, but I wanted to use French. And finally, my father wanted me to do pharmacology, but if I had no sciences, that was a pipe dream. His view was that I needed something that was international. So finally we agreed that I would take a Bachelor of Commerce degree. To Miss Bishop's great surprise, she said she's never heard of a girl wanting to do that. And that required a Group 4 higher school certificate, which the school was not providing. But she arranged for me to go to the Chiswick Grammar School for Girls, which adjoined the Chiswick Grammar School for Boys in the same building. So I must have been one of the first girls to go to a boys' school, effectively.